Good morning. We got all the parts put together right. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes on to keep things happening. So anyway, I'm grateful for our team. I'm Rusty. I'm senior pastor at New Hope. And whether you're on campus, online, or later in the week on demand, we're glad you're joining us. Let me say this. If you're not here on campus, this is what you're missing, is our friends from Mission Muffins. And I borrowed this. Actually, they said I could have it, but I'd feel guilty if I kept it. So they have a roaster from Alexandria that roasts beans for them. And so they have the, and I buy the beans, grind them every morning. Everything they have is good. And some of you are thinking, well, I don't need, coffee doesn't have calories. Well, some of it does because you put so much stuff in it. But, I mean, all the stuff they have is not only good food, but it's for a good cause, and you can do something with it. You may not want them. That's fine. Why don't you buy some and give it to some of your neighbors? Surprise them with something nice and explain to them why. Tony and Jerry are out there, and they're here once a month, and they're just great guys. So stop by there before you split. Some of you are wondering why we would do that song from Top Gun. It's because Becky wanted to dance. She was at the 9 o'clock and danced like crazy. During the when they did that song, she nudged me. She goes, I just really want to rock out. I've never thought that, never said it in my whole life, but she's a dancer, and we do want to have fun. There's a reason that we're doing the movie series. This has been a tradition with us for a bunch of years. Every August, we'll pick some movies that are fairly well known, and we're using the movies like Jesus did when he told parables. Jesus would tell a story that would illustrate something really important that we need to grab hold of. And so movies do that. You know, they're images and sounds from movies that you and I hang on to. And if we can infuse some meaning, and I'm not saying this is what the original producers and all that intended, but there are some ways in this movie it illustrates some things that really are important for us to get. So that's what our intention is today. If you miss any of this in the series, you can go get our app, or you can go online and get them. But today we're doing Top Gun. Some of you will remember this. I mean, the movie came out, it's hardly 36 years ago, and they've just come out with a sequel. This is not a remake, it's a sequel. I think that's a record for how long there was a span of time. But this, if you didn't see it, this is the original trailer from it.
I'm going to send you up against the best.
Yes, sir.
You two characters are going to Top Gun.
I feel the need. The need for speed.
For 5 weeks, you're going to fly against the best fighter pilots in the world.
You guys really are cowboys.
I'm an instructor at this school. I see 20 new hot shots every 8 weeks.
I don't like you because you're unsafe.
That's right.
I am dangerous.
Wild card. Runs by the seat of his pants.
Yeah, I guess when I see something, I go right after.
It takes a lot more than just fancy flying.
Gentlemen, this school is about combat. There are no points for second place.
Figured it out yet?
That's right.
Who's the best pilot?
No, I think I can figure that one out on my own.
That probably says it all. I'm going to tell you a little bit of background. I'll tell you some about the movie, but there's some facts about it. Originally, instead of Tom Cruise, they wanted to get John Travolta to be the lead guy in this. Travolta wanted too much money, and he'd had a couple of movie flops, so they decided to look for others. They talked to Jim Carrey. That seems like a stretch to me. And then Michael J. Fox. Tom Cruise turned him down several times, until they gave him a flight in one of those F-14s. And two things happened when he flew. One is he threw up pretty dramatically, and when they landed, he goes, I am going to make this movie. He's an adrenaline kind of junkie guy. There's no CGI in this. There's not computer-generated graphics and all that. So they are actually in the planes flying. Now, they're not flying the planes. They had real aviators doing that. One of them that became an astronaut later. And then near the end of the filming, one of the pilots crashed and died. They dedicated it to him. So there's definitely risk to all this. The sequel was really surprising. It was filmed. I think they finished it in 2018, and they waited because of COVID and other reasons to put it out. And it's done ridiculously well. It's the first $1 billion-plus movie for Tom Cruise. It's done almost $1.5 billion. It's in the top 10. It's actually number 9 of the highest grossing movies in box office history. And again, it's surprising when it's a sequel like that. Usually the first one does really well. And the one that came out now, Top Gun Maverick, only two of the original actors are in that. That's Tom Cruise and then Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, they had to computer generate his voice because he's had throat cancer and lost it. So they used actual voice stuff he had done in the past, and they were able to pull it together to make it fit in this. A couple of other things about the movie is that over 10% of the budget for the original one went to the Pentagon for jet fuel, time in the air, and then for the ships. And at one point, there was an extra $25,000 paid to the Navy to get one of their ships to turn around so they could get a better view of some of the shooting they were doing. They spent a lot of time and effort on this thing. They wanted it to be as real as possible. The Navy also realized that they might have something going, so they set up recruiting booths outside some of the bigger theaters. And for that year, they had a 500% increase of the number of applicants they had because they'd see that and, oh, I got to be Tom Cruise or whatever. At the actual Top Gun school, which is a 13-week program for the very elite fighters to get even better, I read this from a book from one of the Top Gun commanders. He said they have a $5 fine for anyone that quotes anything from the movie. They just want to shut that down as much as possible. Aviator sunglasses, they couldn't keep enough of those. Leather jackets, it was a phenomenon. The movie is about a young pilot, this Pete Mitchell, goes by Maverick, that is undoubtedly a phenomenal pilot, but he's also an extreme risk taker. It's this kind of thing. He's a loner, except he's got his best friend who is his radar officer, a guy named Goose. And by the way, Anthony Edwards plays his best friend in the movie. He's the only one of the actors that didn't throw up during the filming. So he apparently has an iron stomach for flights. But anyway, Tom Cruise is a loner. He's independent. He comes across like he doesn't care what anyone thinks. The reality is just the opposite. His dad was a naval aviator, and his dad's reputation was that he had taken some risky decisions, and because of his decisions, some others in his squadron were killed along with him. And so Tom Cruise has been, this Maverick has been trying to live out from under the shadow that he'd had of a father that was known as a failure and reckless and all this stuff, and yet you watch him, and everything he does seems to be designed to make him look like he's really somebody. That's really the underlying motive that he has. And you'll see this later on. This next clip, let me set it up first before we show it, is they've gone to Top Gun school, and they've had a couple of things. He just had a training exercise going against one of the best pilots there, and he actually did really well. But the problem is he put himself and he put his radar officer at great risk. In fact, there's real concern about does he not have any limits? And truth is, he doesn't, because his goal, again, he's trying to create an image of himself to overcome the one he's had. This is what his commanding officer and the guy that's been training him, this is their thinking. They're doing a fitness report on him, and this is what they come up with in the beginning of the school.
Fitness report says it all. He's a wild card. Flies by the seat of his pants. Completely unpredictable.
He got you, didn't he?
Yeah.
Maverick. Flew with his old man.
Tell me one thing. If you had to go into battle, would you want him with you?
I don't know. Just don't know.
And that pretty much sets up most of the movie. He's got huge potential. But there's a lot of danger that goes along with him, too. We're going to look at another scene in a little bit, but I just want to set the stage for this. All of us make a decision on how we're going to live. We all do what makes sense to us. Every one of us, we have an image that we portray. It may be one we've worked really hard at. It may be involuntary, but it's there. You know, like Stacy said, we could all have a... If we ask people around us, so how would you describe me? They come up with all kind of words that would. Some of them might be positive, some of them not so much. But here's the thing is, for us to live our lives at our fullest God-given potential, there are two questions that we need to answer and answer well. And they're real simple questions. Parents, this is something you want to help your kids answer. You need to be able to answer to, and that is, who am I and why am I here? These are not, I mean, they're simple questions to ask, but the answers have huge meaning to them. For Maverick, who am I? I'm the son of a failed aviator. And I don't want to be a failure myself. That's who I am. Why am I here? To prove to everybody I'm something, I'm somebody. And that's the narrative throughout the whole movie. All of us have answers to this one way or the other. If you're a student of the Bible, if you read through the Old Testament, there's all kind of kings and leaders that we read about in the Old Testament. I want to mention two of them to you. One is a guy named Rehoboam, and the other one is Josiah. And the father issues show up in this, and that's not the point of the movie, but Rehoboam, his father was Solomon. Solomon, one of the wisest people. I mean, he was a phenomenal intellect, and he was David's son that took over as king. When Rehoboam becomes king, he's living in his dad's shadow. His dad was amazingly smart. He was world-renowned. He had accomplished so many in these building projects. He had done an amazing job, but at a cost. And so when Rehoboam becomes king, his father passes away. Rehoboam has some advisors, two groups of advisors. Some older, wiser ones said, whatever you do, start off your administration by treating the people well. Your father taxed them heavily, worked them very hard. We accomplished a lot, but at a high price. You have a chance to change the narrative, and you can really serve your people well by not just giving them a free ride, but really caring about your constituents. He had a younger group of advisors who said, oh, that's the last thing you should do. You got to be the man, and you've got to be the man more than your dad was, and that's going to take some work. He listened to the younger ones. And what he went back to do, and he told the whole public this, he goes, you think my dad was hard on you? You ain't seen nothing yet. And he was brutal, he was mean, because he wanted to prove something about who he was. He wanted to get out of his dad's shadow. Now we move, later on, we hear about King Josiah. Josiah's dad was just an evil, evil He wasn't king for very long, and in fact, he lost his kingly reign by a coup. There were a group that came in, and some of you are familiar with this. We see it throughout the world where instead of we understand the peaceful transition of power. We're figuring some of that out. But in a lot of countries, the transition of power is whoever's got the guns and the might that can come in and take the one administration out and replace it with another. And that's what happened here. Josiah's father was taken out. He was assassinated. A new group came in, and there was a public outcry. They hated what was going on, and so a public swell of movement, and they got rid. They completely eliminated the ones that had fomented the coup, and the public decides who our next king is going to be, and they picked that former king's son. Interestingly enough, Josiah was 8 years old when he became king. Probably they were thinking, let's get one before he's damaged. Let's get one that we can train. Some of you know this. You work with companies. They don't want you to have experience somewhere else. They want you to come in new so they can shape you according to the, you know, the culture or DNA of the business. Anyway, so Josiah comes in 8 years old, and he develops into a remarkable king. A God-honoring king, a guy that cares about his people, cares about God. And you can see this throughout his, I think he was king for 30 or 40 years and treated the people right. When he would answer the question, who am I and why am I here? He'd say, I'm a child of God. And the fact is, I've been given this role. Why am I here? I'm going to honor him and I'm going to take care of his people. Choices that you and I have to make. And it's before all of us. Jesus talked about this, talked about kind of what's the foundation of my life? And he told this parable. So follow along with me as I read this. He says, anyone who listens to my teaching and follows me is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the winds beat against that house, it will not collapse because it's built on bedrock. I have no idea. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash. It goes on to say how people were amazed about what Jesus said and how he taught. Our lives, mine and yours, they're very unique and they're extremely precious and valuable. And the foundation that we build our lives on matters. Now, you'll notice in this that both the houses that were built, the winds and rains and torrents and floods, all that came. Becoming a follower of Jesus, really following God, doesn't mean I'm going to not have problems and crises and difficulties and all that come my way. Now, you can buy books that will tell you that. They're just lying. The truth is that this side of heaven, this part of life, we're going to go through things. We're going to deal with things. And it's what holds me fast or doesn't that matters. This building we're in, back in 06, we were building this place. Things were going great. And then we get a call. We have bad dirt. I looked at it. From my expert eye, it just looked like dirt. But it was bad dirt. 1,200 truckloads of excavated dirt were taken out of this place, and they brought in 1,200 truckloads of identical-looking dirt, but apparently it was good dirt, for $960,000 and several months. We had to delay everything we were doing to do it. We could have avoided the cost and the time. We could have been in a lot earlier, and this building would have looked exactly the same for a while. And then things would start showing up. Cracks in the foundation impact everything. You and I building our lives on this foundation, it doesn't say here that it's easy, but it's saying that it's absolutely essential. The foundation makes all the difference. Jesus offers us something that we desperately need, and that is to have a foundation, a relationship that we can build our lives on. Small choices, big choices, direction, all that kind of thing, where we can know, no matter what happens to me, I am in the best hands ever. And whether good things happen, bad things happen, I'll never have to go through it alone. And it's that simple. I admit that I need what Jesus offers. I believe that he came to rescue me, and I choose to follow him. That's the foundation. And everything else comes from that. So who am I? If I'm answering the question as a follower of Jesus, I am a child of God. I'm loved by him. I've been adopted into his family. And regardless of my background, my family heritage, or my own failures, the moment I become a follower of Jesus, I am now, I have my life on a foundation that will never, ever fail me. This is God's promise. Why am I here? I'm here to do everything I can to honor him, to show gratitude to him, and help others see the value of following him, what he can do in a life that is surrendered to him. One of the things that realize too, and we'll see this in a minute, is that there are times when God's going to allow me to go through some really, really hard things. Sometimes we blame God for it, but what I need to realize is that He wants to use my life as a way for people to see the value of trusting him, regardless of what you go through. That he is the rock that can hold us strong and firm. The movie does something that I would prefer it didn't. There are times when I'd like to stop a movie in the middle and say, change it. You messed up. You blew it. They wouldn't have listened to me in Top Gun. But there's a scene. I'm going to give you an explanation of this and we'll see it. Tom Cruise has been, again, he's been flying like he always does. Super talented, but extremely risky. And he's on a maneuver in the training and he does a very risky move and it ends up creating turbulence. He ends up, there's a crash, and his best friend, his radar officer, is killed. And you see Tom Cruise in this. Maverick is crushed. And even though he's exonerated by the board that reviews it, he still carries with him this sense of responsibility, which he should. He is, for the first time that we see, he's really broken, and he doesn't know what to do. His image that he's been creating is now you see all kind of cracks in it, and he's ready to quit. He goes to see his commanding officer and asks for some advice, and that's what this scene is about. He's broken, he's crushed, and while he's there, he finds out something about his dad he never knew before. So let's watch this scene, and we'll let this guide us to the next part.
So he did do it, Mike.
Yeah, he did it, right?
Is that why you fly the way you do? Trying to prove something? Yeah, your old man did it, right?
What I'm about to tell you is classified. It could end my career.
We were in the worst dogfight I ever dreamed of. Bogies like fireflies all over the sky. His F-4 was hit. He was wounded, but he could have made it back. He stayed in it, saved three planes before he bought it.
How come I never heard that before?
Well, that's not something the State Department tells dependents when the battle occurred over the wrong line on some map.
So you were there?
I was there. What's on your mind?
My options, sir.
Simple. First, you've acquired enough points to show up tomorrow and graduate with your Top Gun class. Or you can quit. There'd be no disgrace. That spin was hell or would have shook me up.
So you think I should quit?
I didn't say that. The simple fact is you feel responsible for Goose and you have a confidence problem. A good pilot is compelled to always evaluate what's happened so he can apply what he's learned.
He finds out his dad wasn't what he'd been told all along because they couldn't get that word out. He'd been living under a shadow that was false, which explained a lot about why he took all these risks and the danger that he did. But then he's been told that, really, you have a confidence problem. And while that might be true on some level, there's a whole lot more than that. He had a foundation problem. He had to address what was going on, of course. But there are crises that happen to us. There are times when our life shakes us, and it ought to make us think, so what is really going on here? You know, what we can do if we're, you know, some of you have done this before, you've had cracks in your house, and rather than looking to see if there's a foundation problem, you just go out and buy spackling. And every few months, the crack's getting bigger, I got to put more spackle in it. You're not really addressing the problem. It could be, boy, marriage doesn't work out second, third, fourth time. Can't find the right job. I don't have the right boss. So, there are all kind of things we come up. And what we do is we end up changing the things on the top without really looking at what's going on the foundation. A poor foundation affects everything. And you and I have the opportunity to look at it and see. God loves us. He knows what's best for us. And there are times when he allows things to go along. He doesn't stop them because he wants us either to see something or he wants others to see something through us. There's something deep in all of us we need to take a hard look at. Every one of us do what makes sense to us. You can think of someone that you think is making some of the worst decisions you've ever seen. And if you could get inside their head, you'd realize they think it makes sense. In their worldview, in their how they're saying things, this is the right thing to do. The rebellion I did when I was growing up, it all fit a pattern for me. Was it smart? Absolutely not. But it made sense within the environment that I lived in. And God wants us to step out and really see things from his vantage point. It's kind of like, if you ever had a stress test? I had some surgery several years ago, and the only time I've ever had a stress test. They got me in there, and they get you on this platform, and you start going until you're sucking wind. And the technicians and all that were right near me said, okay, you're good, we're done. And the doctor came in, and he's just a sadist. He goes, oh, he's not done. He can do a lot more than that. And I really am. I thought, I'm about to pass out. And I don't know what happens when you hit that tread thing and you pass out. I'm in a hospital, so that's probably good. But the stress test, it helps me see what's really there or what's missing. And there are times when that happens in our lives. God allows it in his kindness. There's a book by a guy named Sheldon Vanocken. It's called A Severe Mercy, where as he walked through a horrible tragedy in his life, he could look back on it and see that he believed God was using that to help him see something he would have never seen otherwise. Jesus says that this foundation thing is important. And ultimately, if we're built on a bad foundation, it's going to crack. It will not survive long term. We can build our lives on any foundation we want, but we cannot choose the consequences of that. Right now, some of us here are experiencing some really, really hard times. And there are kind of crises that are going on. We may have to let others know. It may be something that's just going on internally. But we're struggling. And we're having to make some decisions. And sometimes what happens is it exposes what's really going on with us. Let me give you a few examples here. There's some of us here that are really hard workers and are driven to do our best. And in some cases, that's a great thing. But it could also be something else. It could be that My drive to be the best is I've got to prove to others just how good I am. And in fact, I've got to do even more than is expected because I don't want them to see through the facade that I don't really have what it takes. Some of us have got reputations of being really nice and really kind. People love to have us around. We're the ones that are always invited. And that could be because we've learned to be nice and kind. It could also be that we just want people to appreciate us. And so I'm going to do nice and kind things. My motive, quite honestly, is just so I have a reputation of being the nice, kind person. Some serving others. And sometimes at great expense, even sacrificially. And you could say, wow, that's a real picture of Jesus. Could be. But my motivation underneath could be, I just want to be needed. I want to be appreciated, and I've got to. I had there was a pastor in Richmond some years back that had was building a nationwide reputation of being this phenomenal teacher and preacher. And he got caught, and he had to admit that he had been plagiarizing most of his sermons that he got all this credit for. This is before Google. There was an image that he just wanted. He wanted to be somebody. He wanted to be the man. See, sometimes what's on the top, you don't really know what the motivation is underneath. We can camouflage it pretty easily. Some people are extremely rebellious, and you can think they're just out to harm others. They don't, you know, all this kind of stuff. The truth is they are so lonely. They're so hurt. They're so lost. They're just trying to prove something, to have some value. There are people that join cults, and the cults prey on people that are lonely and insecure. It's going to give them a family. It's going to give them something to belong to. And they'll do some horrible things just to belong. There are people that pick all kind of identities and groups they join because they just want to be seen. They want to be valued. They want to be known. But at a high, high cost. And you and I have something to offer. We have a chance in this lifetime to let people see a picture of Jesus. And you're thinking, why would God not protect me from having to go through this? This injustice or this loss or this whatever it is. And it may be that what God's doing is he wants to use you as a demonstration of what it's like when you go through the storms and the winds and earthquakes and all that, that with Jesus you can withstand it because Jesus is right there with you and he will not let you go. There'll be a time when history wraps up in heaven, we'll be able to see the bigger picture of why all kind of things happen. It may be God trying to get my attention so I'll come to him, or it may be God using me in my example to show others what a life built on him can do. If I choose to build my life on a relationship with Jesus, I will find that it is a perfect fit. It's never wrong. The God that created us knows what's best for us. Jesus said this. He goes, if the Son sets you free, you are truly free. You don't have to create this image. You don't have to live to try to prove something to others. You can live with a freedom knowing that God gets you, he knows you, he loves you, and he'll be with you no matter what you go through. And he will never, ever rip you off. I had another clip I was going to use, and I decided early this morning to leave it out. And instead, what I'd like to do is lead us to pray. So would you? You can bow with me however you like to pray. Let's pray together. God, right now, you know where every one of us is, and you know what foundation we really are building our lives on. There's some of us that claim to follow you, but we're going through the motions. We're going through religious motions because we want to fit in. We want to look a certain part. We want others to see us a certain way. And while we can't escape some of that, when that is our ultimate goal, we're in big trouble. There's some of us that have been faking it and pretending. Some of us have created images that we have felt like that image is going to carry us, but it's not an adequate foundation. For some of us, the cracks are showing and we're really struggling. And I pray, God, today that all of us would look at our lives and be able to honestly ask, am I really building my life on a relationship with Jesus Christ? Or is it religion or work, being cool or something else? Father, there's some of us that genuinely are following you, but we're really hurting too and wondering, is it worth it? Wondering if you really get us. And I pray for anyone in that position that today you'll remind them that you will not allow anything to come our way, that you will not give us the goods and the resources and the capacity to not just endure, but to walk through it with confidence, knowing that you are there with us and that you will use even the hard things for something good for us and others. There is a watching world that really needs to see purpose and meaning and hope. Help those of us that know you to choose to show something that's good and real. In Christ's name.